Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 461st edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can ditch your daily reading from me and other writers over at Once a Metro and the rest of the SB Nation of family of soccer websites. The chat room is open. Come on in, discuss amongst yourselves if you like. If you have a question for me and my guest, I'll try to answer to the best of our abilities. And ladies and gentlemen, it's not just the players that make MLS wonderful through these first 25 years. It's also the voices that have made MLS what it is today. And, of course, joining me right now, a good friend of the show, very glad to have him on to talk about his broadcasting career, is the one and only, the former Fox Soccer Channel show host, the one and only Christian Miles. Christian, thank you for coming back on. How are you, and what's going on over there in sunny California?
5 years, Feuerstein. 5 years since you had me on. I've been counting every second. Good. Everything is great.
Absolutely.
The sun is shining. The birds are chirping. I've been locked up in my house for 2 months straight with my small children. I've traded in my headsets and microphone for a dry erase boards and homeschooling teacher instruction kit. So yeah, that's kind of my life in a nutshell at this point, but everything's great. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Everything is great. Of course, I'm glad you and your family are doing well through this difficult times with this pandemic, but hopefully it's on the fall that we can get back to our normal lives. And, of course, you can get back to doing what you love to do and what we all love to do, to talk about the world's greatest game, the world's favorite game in football, soccer. So let's hope we can get through this whole situation and get back into the swing of things. Where are you originally from? I'm assuming you're not originally from L.A., but if you are, that'd be great. But where are you originally from, actually, and how did you get involved with the game, and why did you love it so much?
This is the part where we can start bagging on Southern California and Los Angeles, right? I'm from Portland, Oregon, originally, and I moved. I've been down in Los Angeles since 1997, where I moved from a prior television job just out of college, and started up what is now FS1, back in the day, which was titled Fox Sports World, and then morphed into Fox Soccer Channel, which morphed into Fox Soccer, and into its present incarnation, FS1 and FS2. And as far as the game goes, I mean, I've always, you know, played the game growing up at, you know, not at a high level, you know, pretty much just like an average kid growing up in the 70s and 80s. And, you know, played it recreationally, played it in school, always loved it. But as like a lot of us, a certain age, there weren't a lot of avenues, and it wasn't a lot of availability in terms of seeing the game, unless you, you know, went to, in my case, an old Portland Timbers game in the NASL, which I did. You know, you couldn't watch anything like you can now. Like you couldn't watch anything back then like you could just 20 years ago, you know, when we started up the Fox Sports World channel. So, you know, it's got kind of just kept growing with the sport. And as it became more available, and after some jaunts overseas, it became kind of more immersed in it from an international perspective, spending a lot of time overseas in Italy and in England and Western Europe. And just, you know, it kind of reinvigorated my love for the sport. So, and that's kind of it in a nutshell.
What was it like over there? I mean, obviously, you know, when you are living in a countries like England and France and Germany, Italy, Spain, it's an automatic over there. Meanwhile, over here, it's had its ups and downs, of course, but as you know, it's the NFL, it's Major League Baseball, the National Basketball Association, the NHL, those are the sports that define North America. Even though we've had our own history, we've had a lot of ups and downs with this sport here. You know, what was the differences? Was it like night and day for you when you were over across the pond?
Oh, absolutely. This is, you know, the mid-90s. So, and, you know, the advent of the internet really hadn't become widespread. So a lot of, you know, the vision and availability of soccer here in the United States was based upon that. And soccer kind of grew exponentially with the advent of the internet. And this is just prior to that. So I was coming in real stone cold as to, and unawares and naive as to how big soccer was in internationally and how big it was overseas, especially, you know, in the midst of World Cup qualifying for 1998, being over in Italy and, you know, witnessing everything shutting down and watching games in the gelaterias and such and the local bars. Yeah, it was just eye-opening experience for any American, anybody that, you know, hasn't been exposed to it at that level, to that degree of intensity and fandom. It was interesting, and it really kind of helped me fall in love with the game. One of the reasons I fell in love with the game is just how passionate and how kind of deeply involved these people were with that sport, particularly because, you know, that's sound cliche and we've all heard it before. There's only one sport over there and it's football. And that's what they follow. There's none of the other distractions in terms of athletics and sports that we have to the degree that we have here in the US. So it was just fun to be a part of it and kind of, you know, wrap myself up in that culture and learn and watch and observe, as a foreigner. It was great. And, it was an eye-opening experience that kind of changed my perspective.
And then finally, I mean, I shouldn't say finally, but of course, obviously after going through everything in Europe, when did you make the move back to the States? And when did you find out about, Fox Sports creating this, Fox Sports World Channel? Because I remember when it was just a fledgling, I guess, a pay channel at the time, I would remember every once in a while, and you may know this person, I know he's the current voice of the San Jose Sharks and Randy Hahn, he would always be the one in front of these monitors with the Fox Sports World logo behind it saying, you know, welcome, thank you for watching this free preview of Fox Sports World. Please join us again for another time or something like that. When did you start getting involved with that channel before it became what we all knew at the time later on as Fox Soccer Channel?
Well, I was actually the hamster on the wheel behind those monitors that Randy was sitting in front of. I was literally running the prompter for Randy Hahn and was actually in awe of Randy. His voice seemed like it was his tailor-made for television and sports / radio announcing. But I had become aware of the channel through a friend of mine, actually my professional mentor who became a really good friend, Ed Wyatt, who I worked with up in Portland, Oregon at the NBC affiliate as a producer for those shows that were at one time called PM Magazine. And it morphed into a title of a show called Good Evening, which was a local based show that was in each and every city or many cities in the U.S. spotlighting local areas and stories of interest every night. And he and I became very close. He was a massive soccer fan and he came down to Los Angeles on before me on an unrelated job. And then met a person who was involved with the advent of Fox Sports World. This woman was an Australian, and the original form of this now existing FS1 as FS World back in 1997 in the launch of October that year. It was an Australian-American joint merger setup, and it was meant to spotlight actually Australian rules football as well as rugby. And it offered a smattering of soccer on the side, like a little Italian Serie A, a little UEFA Cup coverage, which is now, of course, the UEFA Europa League, and the Scottish Premier League, amongst others. And I gravitated, of course, to the soccer side of it. And then as the channel started to move in that direction, it allowed my role to grow along with the channel.
And, of course, what were some of those events that was being broadcasted besides soccer for Fox Sports World? I mean, it had to be at least maybe some rugby, Australian rules football, I would have to assume, also maybe some cricket. Was that the idea to introduce these sports to the American audience? Because I've known many people have talked about this week in German football being on PBS or your local PBS stations being the first taste. And, of course, we know that the Italian channel RAI has always shown every Sunday match of the week from Italy, from the Serie A. But was this supposed to be a broader sense, this channel?
Yes, and it was meant to be skewed towards Australian setups and an Australian-centric sporting perspective. And in fact, Fox had reached out to a lot of people based in Australia, as well as the UK, to bring them over to Los Angeles and set up this venture called Fox Sports World. It's interesting. It was meant to basically give greater visibility to these international sports, like Australian rules football, like international rugby competitions, mostly of the international variety, not too much club rugby at that point. As well as, actually a lot of German Bundesliga as well, back in the early days. It was one of the side channel, side sports that they kind of used to fill the programming day. But an interesting side point that you noticed here, the old Toby Charles public broadcasting show. I remember watching as a kid on PBS, and we'd always get it a week late, meaning I would be watching on, I believe it was a Friday night or a Saturday, I can't remember, Saturday night. And I'd be watching the previous round's kind of consolidated match highlight show. And that was about all the exposures that us Americans could get to the international game at that point. So that brings back a flood of memories from my childhood, and as well as the 90s with Fox Sports World.
Yeah. I mean, those were the crazy times. And then, of course, once we get past, I guess, the whole Fox Sports World theme, which I thought it did very well. But then again, you know, what was the number one vision, the number one idea to bring over to Americans? The game of football, the game of soccer internationally. And then, of course, the name change from Fox Sports World to Fox Soccer Channel. What did that mean for you as a fan? And what did it mean for those of, working with others that love the game over there, that want to be a part of the game? Obviously, we know we have a mutual friend in Gary Gazzar Richards, of course, who is with you as an analyst on Fox Soccer Channel. What was it about that change that says to you, maybe finally this game will finally get the respect it deserves in this country?
Well, it kind of signified that, hey, we're going to get on board and try and promote the sport. Fox had decided that, hey, this is the direction we want to go. And they were gathering more eyeballs for that. And that is what led to them basically becoming an exclusive soccer programming show or channel. And it was great. I mean, it allowed me to grow. It was a massive learning curve, all kinds of colorful characters. And I learned television. Ironically, a lot of the traditional upbringing of people that work in television is you start at a smaller market and a smaller position, and you work your way up according to market size into, you know, the bigger markets like New York and Los Angeles. And ours was interesting because we were an entirely independent arm of Fox, run by an international group of people that really didn't have any background, that much background in American television. It was all British television and a lot of, you know, Argentine and Australian television. There's a massive difference in schools of thought and production methods and methodology. So I learned from that perspective and that point of view, which is very different to what we see on the air today, what we saw on the air back then. And it was so fun, and so it allowed me to expand my breadth of knowledge about television. It allowed me to make the transition personally from a guy who was had a goal of being a producer and actually came on board. I actually was hired as a production assistant, and I remember my first day driving around Los Angeles. I was told to go get props for a set for a shoot out of a remote location in LA. And I'm driving around my 1973 Cadillac Coupe DeVille around Los Angeles, you know, it's getting like 7 miles to the gallon, going to sporting goods stores in a city that I've been in about 6 days. So that existed to, you know, about a year later, getting my first shot in, on the mic in front of the camera, if you will, and calling games. And I developed a love of calling those games, something I've kind of always wanted to do, and allow it to grow. They gave me, afforded me some chances, because I was just a kid off the street who, you know, had production background at an affiliate level in Oregon with NBC, but had really no on-air experience whatsoever. And I got a chance to cut my teeth there, and to a frustration, I'm sure, of a lot of the viewers out there. But it was a massive learning curve, and one which I'm forever grateful to my boss, Dermot McCrory, who ran Fox Sports World, as well as Fox Soccer Channel back then, as well as all the good people that I work with. And so it was just so much change going on, and it was just fun to be a part of.
What was it like to finally be a studio host for the Premier League from England? Because, you know, you had Warren Barton out there. Here's a guy who has spent all his life as a footballer playing for Newcastle United. And, of course, probably was also an analyst over there with, at the time, probably just the BBC. And then, of course, there's Sky Sports, BT Sport over there. And then he comes over to the States, where not only is he involved with the game, of course, those days, I think he was a part of that San Diego Flash side. But still, though, you know, he comes to the studio and he gives you his opinions on what goes on in the Premier League. What was it like to work with a guy like him, working with others that, you know, oh, my God, we have the rights to the English Premier League, you know, full time now. And, you know, you're just sitting there every Saturday morning, early, early morning, because what is it? 7 o'clock in the morning on the East Coast here, 7:45, I would think, in the East Coast for the Premier League. That starts like what, 5 hours ahead of us? That'd be like maybe 1:30, 2 o'clock in the afternoon over there. For you, that's like what, 4 hour difference, 4:45 in the morning or 4:30 in the morning on the Pacific Coast time. I mean, that had to be brutal.
It was. We would not usually cover the lunchtime kickoff. We would do the 7 o'clock Pacific time kickoff game. So we would have to be, you know, ready to go at 6:30. But in television, normally your crew calls about 2 hours beforehand. So we were in the studio at 4:30, and, you know, getting our makeup and our hair done and getting all pretty, and watching, of course, the early lunchtime kickoff game. And we had to be abreast of that because it was a match that we would cover, and we had to be aware of what was going on all the storylines and such. So yeah, those early morning wake-up calls, I do not miss. The alarm going off at 3 a.m. and, you know, trudging in and driving the, you know, vacant freeways of Los Angeles into our studios and doing it. It wasn't exactly the most opportune time, but I wouldn't have traded in the world. It gave me the chance to work along a bona fide, true Premier Leaguer in Warren Barton, who I always knew was the guy who, you know, kicked the mic at Anfield after scoring that goal. And I actually admired him and watched him play in the Premier League, and my limited experience watching it. I didn't really know how big the Premier League was when that job fell into my lap. I really didn't know. I had just no idea. I thought it was on par with the Scottish Premier League in terms of popularity. It was really, there was no way for us to know here if you were an American kid growing up. But as I became aware, it was massive. It was, you know, of NFL proportions in terms of an international perspective. So it was an eye-opening experience for me to see that and to be entrusted with it with such little experience. It was, again, leads me to be forever grateful for the people that did give me the chance to do it. And it was petrifying, to answer your question. There's a saying, I filled my pants. I can tell you, when I got the job, I was excited, but I did fill my pants a few times, and that red light would go on for the first time. I remember, I believe it was somewhere in the 2000s. It was an eye-opening experience, and we were, you know, of limited resources back in those days, where, you know, television is in the United States is very well funded in a lot of regards from the sports that you see on a mainstream basis. And they had the resources that we didn't have. We didn't even have prompter. We were flying ad lib basis a lot of the time. And that was when we first started up. So it was kind of, you know, fly by the seat of your pants, do what you can do, more of a Latin American production method of television, where it's, you know, much looser and more free flowing and conversational and more of an ad lib improvisational type of television. So that's how I learned, and, you know, it made me better. And Warren grew with me. He had a lot of experience calling games in the UK and for the Premier League, and he brought us credibility and playing at the highest level for one of the, you know, the most, you know, well known sides in the English Premier League, in Newcastle United. So, and Warren was a prince to work with. I couldn't have asked for a better broadcast partner. He knew what the situation, he understood where soccer was in the American sports landscape, but he also knew that, hey, this is what we're dealing with here. This is our limited resources, our limited budgets, our limited capabilities. I'm sure it was hard for him to swallow coming from a country that was, you know, so enraptured in where football was, you know, 24/7 and the biggest thing in the country. So it was a big adjustment for him, but he handled it like a true pro. And, you know, he saved my ass many, many a time, which I will also be forever in his debt.
Absolutely. I mean, look, to me, you know, Warren Barton coming over and, you know, giving a lot of, I would say, you know, credibility to the work that you've done, that he's done. And of course, you know, having that channel grow the way it did, and then finally moving forward into what, of course, I would like to think finally, at the time, finally adding Major League Soccer to its broadcast lineup. I mean, I remember the very first broadcast of the first live match in MLS. I forgot the year, but I do remember you were there live on the scene, I believe, and I could be wrong. You can help me out with this. It had to be somewhere. I'm not sure if it was back. I'm not sure if it was in California or if it was somewhere in Texas. It might have been Dallas. It might have been Houston. I have forgotten, but I remember that you were there with a Fox Soccer Channel advert board behind you with the mic flag. How proud you were that finally Major League Soccer was going to be on the channel that you're broadcasting nationally, MLS games. I mean, you were there, obviously, but for myself personally at that time, I felt proud that finally we have a major network like Fox having Major League Soccer as a part of its lineup, regardless of how it was all set up. You didn't care. Fox was a part of it. You had a doubleheader, and you were there for the first game. How was that experience for you to finally be there, not in a studio anymore, but be live at an MLS stadium, or at least a stadium that had an MLS team and an MLS match ready to go?
Exciting, proud, and a complete shambolic nightmare, to answer you, Daniel, all in one time. We were so excited to get Major League Soccer and you know, have it part of our programming, and, you know, kind of having it join up and giving it more credibility as well, because it would be joining the slate of programming that we had at the time, and, you know, the European leagues, as well as soccer from Argentina and Brazil. I was ecstatic. I was a sideline reporter, and we had what you would call a dog's breakfast of a show. Anything that could go wrong went wrong. I'm flying by the seat of our pants, from me talking with no sound coming out of my mic to Max Brados, you know, finger brushing his teeth on live on camera, not knowing he was going live nationwide. It was quite the show to behold, one that sometimes we laugh about to this very day, but, you know, it's part of the growing pains that we went through. I was at the Home Depot Center. I can't remember the year. Hey, the Home Depot Center was inaugurated back in 2003. So it was a Galaxy home game. I can't remember against who and who was part of the doubleheader. I couldn't remember at all. And all the eyeballs from the network execs were on it, and we just made a mess of it. you know, it was just a disaster. I mean, I'm being completely upfront and honest with you. But we got through it. We learned from it. It was growing pains. Again, limited resources. and we learned how to do it to the best of our capabilities, given those limited resources at the time. And it became a big staple of the programming. So it was fun, and it's great to, as a side note, personally, it's great to be part of the league back then. I believe, you know, this is early 2000s, to watch it grow from, you know, around 10 to 12 teams to what it is now, and witness the growth of Major League Soccer is kind of, it's really been fun, and it's reflected the growth of the game throughout the United States as a whole. So good times, good and bad memories, but, you know, it's kind of indicative of the way life unfolds, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. No, it really is. And, you know, obviously you try to avoid at the time, I guess, the fledgling of social media when Fox Soccer Channel was either beginning or probably, you know, many people not even talking about or worse saying, you know, oh, that was terrible. How could that happen? Or, okay, look, we'll give them a chance because it's only the first broadcast. We'll give these people an opportunity. And since then it's been, you know, obviously it grew very strongly. It's done very well. Then, of course, the second channel, which was Fox Soccer Plus, coming in. But then, as you know, the channel, you know, was doing exceptionally well. Obviously, losing the Premier League to NBC was probably a big blow. But at the time, all of a sudden, you have Fox Soccer Channel ending, and then you have the whole Fox Sports 1 and Fox Sports 2 beginning. How did you feel about that? Because, you know, you were part of that fledgling growth for Fox, you know, for soccer in this country, including MLS and everything else. I mean, you had to feel sad at some point.
I was sad, and those are, you know, personally tough times for me professionally. I was replaced the year before we lost the English Premier League by Rob Stone, who moved into the anchor role for the final season, which I believe was 2012-2013. I was transitioned into a play-by-play role for the Italian Serie A, which I didn't mind, actually, which I prefer doing anyway. Match commentary is what I really pride myself on and enjoy much more so than hosting. But I had been moved out of that, and that was an ego blow, to be honest with you. Something I found very difficult to swallow. I didn't like the manner in which it was done. But that's the nature of the beast. And to lose the Premier League the next season, it was a big blow to the channel, because that was when the Premier League was really hitting its peak. We built the audience in the United States. We built the profile of the English Premier League here. It had a huge part to play in that. And to lose it, it was tough. You grow up, spend so much time devoting yourself to something, and then it's taken away from you, and it's hard. It's a bitter pill to swallow. I'm sure Rob and everybody else that worked on those broadcasts feels the exact same way. And it was a blow for us, because we did not see NBC coming in. I will say this to their credit: NBC has done a better job than we ever could have done. And I tip my hat and have the utmost respect for a friend of mine, Robbie Earl, as well as Robbie Musto and the irrepressible and brilliant Rebecca Lowe, who I think is probably the best sports presenter on television right now. They have taken it to a new level, and I commend them and have the utmost respect for them. And, unfortunately, the state of Fox Soccer kind of, devolved, if you will, since then, since those days of the Premier League and losing rights to the Italian Serie A as well as the English Premier League, which happened back-to-back since. Was a huge blow. And now, Fox and FS1 are, other than a little World Cup coverage every 4 years and the German Bundesliga, which is no longer going to exist on FS1 as the end of this odd, weird COVID-laced 2019-20 season, there's not much programming for soccer on FS1 and FS2. So for me, from a Fox perspective, it was a little disappointing, but it's allowed the sport to grow on other platforms and other networks and tried it out, whether it be Bleacher Report over on Turner or NBC. Now CBS is going to get its turn to do the Champions League. So it's, change is the ever-flowing constant, and that's what happened to us, good or bad. From a soccer perspective and us, the people that work there, it was tough. It was really hard to swallow to see it go, but hey, you know, that's life, and you move on, you adapt, and go forward.
Absolutely. What were some of the great moments or the great games that you remember Fox Soccer Channel broadcasting? Because obviously it's not just MLS that they broadcasted. It was also the United Soccer Leagues at the time before it became this Championship League and League One, League Two setup. And, of course, you had a couple of Gold Cup tournaments on Fox Soccer Channel, especially, I would say, the Benny File Harbor bomb against Mexico in Chicago. I mean, that was probably, you know, one of the big moments for the channel, national team-wise. What other memories do you have that Fox Soccer Channel broadcasted, you know, that you can remember?
Well, I do remember the 2007 Gold Cup final, and Benny Failhaber lashing that winner against Mexico, and that was a great call from my colleague Max Prados. I was hosting from the studios in California, kind of anchoring things there. We did a game in the Premier League. It was Tottenham Hotspur and Manchester United, and Spurs were just thrashing United. I believe it was at Old Trafford. I can't remember. And we couldn't believe our eyes. I couldn't believe it. I want to say this was 2003, 4. I can't remember. And it was the famous team talk that Fergie came in. He's like, come on, boys, it's Spurs. And they came out, and ultimately Manchester United put together an incredible second half and ended up walking out 5-3 winners in that one. It was absolutely insane. And I remember from a sideline perspective, I was on the sidelines for the San Jose Earthquakes against the LA Galaxy. And it was the playoffs. I can't remember the year. I want to say 2001, but you have to look it up, Google it. And it was the incredible double, triple overtime, whatever it was. And I was serving sideline reporter at San Jose State, Spartan Stadium. And to watch the Galaxy eventually, the Quakes actually went out on that one in that playoffs. It was just unbelievable. Those really stood up. There were so many games, Daniel. Milan derbies were always big for me. I love the Italian Serie A. That's my baby. I grew up, you know, cutting my teeth in that league with the great Fiorentina teams of the mid-90s, like Gabriel Batistuta and Manolo Rui Costa and Luis Oliveira and such. But so anytime we'd get a great, you know, Fiorentina Juventus game, or we get a Milan derby going, would be fun. And of course the Rome derby and the Derby della Madonnina was always a good one as well. But, yeah, it's the Spurs game against Manchester United in that Gold Cup game for the U.S. men's national team. And of course the Major League Soccer playoff game for, between San Jose and the Galaxy was great. It actually was the harbinger of a great rivalry between those two California clubs.
Yeah, no, those are the days. But I'm a little disappointed because I thought you were going to talk about David Beckham's first time at Giant Stadium when they visited the New York Red Bulls, that 5-4 back-and-forth craziness that happened at Giant Stadium, 66,000, the entire upper deck almost filled. I believe you, Mark Rugendino, were over there with Max Bredos and Christian Miles. I mean, that game.
I wasn't a part of that one. I remember that game.
No?
That game was fantastic. I wasn't a part of that broadcast. I wish I was. No, it was that is probably the best game that channel has ever shown. And probably one of the best games that Max has ever called. That's great. I mean, what a game it was. Back and forth. It was at the great UEFA Cup game as well. Alaves against somebody. Mm-hmm. And Max was calling in 2001. It was brilliant as well. I want to say Barcelona, but I can't remember. But yeah, that game, I remember that game, and I remember doing all what was called the Champions World Series, which is now morphed into the ICC. And this is back at the Charlie Stilitano's company would put it on, and I had a chance. Those are some of the best memories of my soccer career. I mean, interviewing Ruud van Nistelrooy, Sir Alex Ferguson, as well as Pelé and Ruud van Nistelrooy, Alessandro Del Piero, Michael Owen, the list goes on and on. And actually, one of the great things, it was 2003, I was at Giants Stadium, the old Giants Stadium. It was summertime. sweltering hot in my first ever suit.
Oh, yeah.
One of the first sideline gigs I had. Nervous as all get out because two of the biggest clubs in the world are playing in, you know, one of the biggest stadiums in the world and one of the biggest cities in the world. And here I am, Manchester United just signed a young kid, local kid from Brunswick named Tim Howard, who stepped out.
Oh, yes.
And Tim was so fresh-faced and so nervous. And he made his debut. He had a great game. Man United, I believe, ended up winning 1-0. And then it started dumping rain. And we couldn't get a ride out of the stadium for 2 hours. And the rain so hard. By the time my suit had dried, it had shrunk an inch, and I'd only worn it one time. But I got a chance to interview Tim Howard. I got a chance in that shrinking suit. It was probably shrinking while I was doing the interview. I had a chance to interview Tim Howard. He was so gracious, you know, and so wide-eyed at the limelight that he had just walked into because he had just signed, you know, a matter of weeks before. And to be playing with all amongst the greats like Jaap Stam and David Beckham and you know, Fergie's fledglings, as well as that great Juventus team, you know, with Alessandro Del Piero and company. It was really something to behold. And that whole Champions World Series was just fantastic, from AS Roma to Man United to Juventus to Celtic. It was a fantastic couple of years.
So what are you doing now, obviously? I'm assuming you're still in broadcasting. I'm assuming you're still doing play-by-play of some sort or studio work. Are you doing anything locally with the Galaxy or, you know, with the colleges? What are you doing right now?
I'm presently radio commentator for the LA Galaxy. So I cover their half of their home games. I also work for the Pac-12 Network covering Southern California college soccer as well. I do other sports these days as well. I cover college basketball. I cover local high school basketball as well. And I'm trying to think, yeah, that's about it really. I mean, lacrosse and just a smattering of other sports, that will always, you know, have a special place in my heart for soccer. So, and between the Pac-12 Network and doing work here locally for Spectrum Sports Net, as well as Fox Sports Net and the Galaxy, and Pac-12 Network, it's been keeping me busy, and it's been a fun ride. It's different than the days of waking up at 3 a.m. doing games from halfway around the world from a little tiny box in Los Angeles to, you know, getting a chance to be on site, on premises, calling the games from a stadium like a normal play-by-play commentator would get to do, as opposed to, you know, having to call them what they call off tube, which is off the screen, which is extremely difficult. That's what's keeping me busy these days. And of course, chasing a 6-year-old and a 2-year-old around, that's where the world work begins, especially in the days of the coronavirus.
Yes. You got to make sure they have their masks on before they go into the backyard, you know.
They've got their LA Galaxy masks as well. Their own Galaxy masks.
Good.
So they're good to go.
Good. Good. Bringing them up the right way. That's what I like to hear from you, Christian. That's definitely what I hear.
Trying.
Bringing them up the right way. Obviously, you know, you have your own personal beliefs and opinions about the sport and how it's been growing here in the U.S. and all these things that, you know, all the chatter that goes on in social media. I know you have an ear to the computer and social media and everything. Are you happy with how MLS has – forget about the growing, you know, it's, you know, the relevance. You know, we know it's that there are times it's still fighting for its relevance, but – which I like to think it's already relevant enough, but, you know, there's always those that will either be for it or against it. What have you seen that you've liked so far of MLS and, of course, the sport in this country as a whole?
I think from a business perspective, Major League Soccer has to be applauded. The way that they promoted itself, grown, expanded their vision, and gone about it has been great. I mean, from the stadium construction to new teams, has been magnificent. It's really raised the profile of the game overall. And I'd like that. And of course, a lot of that has come with the advent of technologies, the internet, social media applications, streaming and such. So that's definitely worked to the advantage. And I think MLS has really been at the forefront of that. And I think the people in the offices, in the media offices in Major League Soccer, I know they're working on limited resources as well, but they do a great job and remain very visible, highly active, do a great job promoting the brand and doing their best and bring good content. And I tip of the hat to Weeby and all those guys over there who do such a good job. You know, there's always good and bad with that. I personally would like to see a format change within the league. I don't like the closed system. I understand the necessity of it. But having a closed system is anti-competitive, in my opinion. I'm a firm believer. I'm a traditionalist, and you know, I'm an old guy of a certain age. So, you know, I like the promotion relegation battles. I like, you know, more weight and more merit being given to the regular season. I don't have an answer as to what is the perfect setup. I don't like the idea of, you know, nearly half your teams making the playoffs, because I think it waters down the relevance of the regular season, but I do like a playoff system as well. So I don't really have a magic answer for you there. I wish I did. I'll leave that to people a lot smarter and more capable than I. But if format change would be nice. It'd be nice to see it open up and you know, free the purse strings up a little bit. What we've been given, you know, we've been given a real big curveball, if you will, with the coronavirus and how that's going to affect the growth of this game, and specifically Major League Soccer and these clubs, is going to be very interesting to see. It's going to be a tough one. It's a league that, you know, derives a lot of its income on gate receipts, match day income, if you will, ancillary income and revenue streams. And that's a big blow for them. So they're going to have to deal with it. But I believe they have the acumen to bounce. And I'd like to see, you know, TV become a little bit more prominent here. I know the numbers aren't exactly there in terms of ratings for Major League Soccer games. It'd be nice to see it really gain a consistent foothold in the American sporting landscape to a higher degree, higher visibility than it already is. I'm a huge believer, a huge backer, a huge proponent of Major League Soccer, because it is the main conduit of the game. And ultimately, it's the game that we love, right? It's not necessarily Major League Soccer. Mm-hmm. It's the game. It's the game that we love, whether it be Spanish, whether it be Argentinian, whatever, Mexican. It's the game that we love, and, you know, like it or not, that Major League Soccer is the conduit for growing that game here in the USA. We have to back it. We have to support it and get behind it, which I fully am, even though I do like Liga MX a lot.
Do you feel with this coronavirus now, you know, in our lives, unfortunately, Do you feel maybe that this is an opportunity for the league to force themselves to change their calendar, to align themselves with the international calendar, starting in the summer in August and then ending in the spring around ending of April, beginning maybe middle of May? Do you feel maybe that this is finally the time to be aligned with the rest of the world?
I would like it. From a personal standpoint, do I think it's going to happen? No. It's entrenched in its ways. Weather is a huge factor, but, you know, people point to the fact that, you know, if you go to a traditional calendar, you're going to be playing, you know, games with an orange ball and nor'easters in January and February. I point to the fact that right now we're playing in, you know, conditions that can cause heat stroke on artificial surfaces and 100-plus 90% humidity situations in the summertime, which I believe is equally severe and detrimental to the game as playing in a nor'easter. So it's pick your poison in terms of the weather argument. It's, you know, it would be interesting. It wouldn't have to go up against baseball in the winter. You can talk about the sports that it would go against from a purely soccer perspective and a traditional perspective for the game to really get on track. The college game needs to go to a full-year schedule. But most importantly, I believe that Major League Soccer does need to get on a more traditional European schedule if they want to fall in line and really get this sport to the position it needs to be.
What's your feeling about the U.S. men's national team and how they got eliminated by Trinidad and Tobago to not go to Russia? up till, I guess, if you want to say the debacle of hiring Greg Berhalter so late in the in this current cycle. How do you feel about that?
It was a debacle. I mean, yeah, like any fan will tell you, it was a nightmare. You know, CONCACAF is not exactly, you know, Conmebol ball or South American World Cup qualifying. The U.S. should be making the World Cup, period, every year. I don't want to hear about how hard it is to play games here and there in this competition and that. The United States, given its resources, given our region, there's no excuse for not qualifying, in my opinion. I know that may ruffle some feathers, but that's just the way I feel and the reality of the situation in comparison to the rest of the world. That's kind of the fact of the matter here. As far as the state of the U.S. Soccer Federation and specifically in regards to the U.S. men's national team, I think what needs to happen is, I don't know how you institute it, more accountability needs to be brought into play. And mediocrity should not be tolerated. I thought it was kind of a scandal. I thought it was really crazy, the fact that we did not hire a coach for as long as we did and sat on our hands. We wasted opportunities to improve ourselves by sitting on our hands at times. Everybody's sole aims and purposes, though, are well-intended, and they want to make it better, and that's what the forgiving aspect of this has to be, that everybody wants what's best for the game, and you know, the actions that are taken, whether you agree with them or not, are made in earnest to make this game better. I believe us as Americans, we are fantastic at the business of sport. We market the sport better than any country in the world can. We have the art of presentation nearly perfected. But what we need to get better at is the sport itself and get down to the brass tacks and nuts and bolts of it and improve the quality of the sport through the standard of play, through scheduling, through television exposure, and through coaching, which is a massive point that's been lacking at this level, at the elite level here in the United States. So, I'm not the guy to, again, institute a program or tell you what needs to be done to improve accountability, but I believe that principle of accountability, which makes these leagues around the world so good, because if you screw up on any level in any league, like we did around the world, you would be filleted publicly, privately, 24/7. And because of the state of soccer here and its status is not an elite tier sport, oftentimes that accountability is not brought into play. And I think that's had a massive effect to the detriment of the quality of Major League Soccer and the present state that the game finds itself in, especially at the international U.S. level.
Yep. Absolutely, there, Christian. And
my 6-year old's knocking around in the kitchen right now. She's getting good.
Well, she'll probably make the women's national team. She'll be fast tracked, so you don't have to worry about it anymore. Forget about the under fours. She'll make the under 20s in 5 seconds.
Oh yeah, I'm always bringing her demo reels to those coaches in the Pac-12 up at Stanford and UCLA and such. So. No, they'll be well acquainted with her here before too long.
Oh, so you've already started it. Look at this.
Oh,
already,
yeah.
With the recruitment. Oh. Look at that.
Yeah, we're playing a little one-touch.
Just remember, Daddy, no nepotism when you're calling her game.
Exactly. We're doing a little one-touch right here as I do this interview in the kitchen. So.
That's fantastic. Hopefully nothing breaks. Don't let mommy know.
just the only thing that's going to break is probably daddy.
Remember when
mom
says no ball playing in the house.
That's true. You're right. I'm going to get busted. The question is, am I going to get busted or spill my beer first? That's the question.
No. Wow. Well, I got to say, Christian, it's been, I think you've had a hell of a career, you know, broadcasting this sport. Obviously, you're doing other things going on, and that's always a great thing to stay on top of all the things you've been doing here. And I'm grateful that, for Gary Richards to get us together and to call each other friends and everything. I know it's been a while. We're also still following each other on Twitter. It's great. I promise it will not be another 5 years to bring you back on this show. when all this coronavirus is over, I'll think of something so you can bring you in, okay?
Got it, man. Yeah, I'm going to take you at that one. And tell Gazza Richards I said hi. He's dearly missed.
I will. Absolutely. He's definitely missed, that's for sure. Well, Christian, thank you very much for being on the show. Be safe over there. Be careful over there. And continue with your successful career, and I really appreciate you coming on.
Daniel, before I go, congratulations on what you bring to the soccer community. I mean, over 450 shows. You said, I believe it's your 461st show. Congratulations to you. Consistency is the bedrock of success. I think you've demonstrated that in spades, and I know a lot of us out there appreciate what you do. I know it's driven by passion. There's not a lot of financial reward behind it at this level, and it's a testament to what you give of yourself to the sport that you love and makes it a better sport for all of us. And we really appreciate it. I appreciate what you're doing. So thanks for having me on. Thanks for doing what you do.
You're welcome, and have a good afternoon where you are on the L.A. coast.
Thanks, Daniel. Take care.
You too. Take care. Christian Miles, former studio host and play-by-play voice on Fox Soccer Channel. He does the L.A. Galaxy games at times on the radio over in L.A., part of Fox Sports still with the Pac-12 games in college soccer, college basketball. A very good man. Very grateful to have him on the show. And I hope everyone enjoyed hearing one of those voices. We're going to continue down the road to bring in voices of the game as well in MLS. Once again, it's not just the players that have made the that have done a wonderful job of creating those moments. We need those broadcasters to really make those moments large, better, huge, and of course, sometimes it's those goal calls that really make it big and make it important. Well, ladies and gentlemen, just to let you know, this coming Saturday, as you know, the Four Seasons Fire American Soccer Show is a media partner of the National Premier Soccer League. As I attended the 2018 NPSL Championship game at Drew University, FC Motown, Morristown, New Jersey, hosted Miami FC. We're going to review that match. Once I get the link from NPSL offices, it was through my Cujo streaming, I'll provide the link not just on the web page of here on the Four Seasons Fire American Soccer Show through blogtalkradio.com. I'll also advertise it on Twitter. And then at 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific, we will have on Carter Krishnar from World Soccer Talk, who was at the time a part of Miami FC, brought as the communications department. Matt Reed, unfortunately for Matt, he is no longer with NBCSports.com, but he will be joining us to talk about that matchup. I was at that match, of course, as there were many former Red Bull players on both sides of those teams in that NPSL championship final. It should be exciting. It should be a lot of fun. I cannot wait. So after you watch that rebroadcast of that match through my Cujo, FC Morristown, FC Motown versus Miami FC of the NPSL, join me here at the Four Seasons Fire American Soccer Show as we're going to talk about that matchup. Once again, thanks to Christian Miles coming on the show. Once again, it's not just the players, it's also the voices that have made this league something special, whether it's for a club side or a national broadcast level. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much. We'll be back next Monday on our regular time at 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific. Thank you once again to Christian Miles for joining me. As always, please, ladies and gentlemen, enjoy your football. Also, please be safe and remain vigilant during this whole coronavirus situation. Have a good afternoon, evening. Take care. So long, and bye-bye for now.